You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh along with Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2024, 6 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome into the show, hour number two. It is
Pump Day.
There you go. Beautiful day here in Wisconsin, at least in Madison. Sun is out. Leaves are turning colors. Fall is upon us. We are just under 3 weeks away from Election Day. Early voting starts a week from yesterday here in Wisconsin. Your opportunity to vote early in person. Absentee voting, of course, already underway. Be a voter, as our friend and colleague likes to say, Luke Mathers. Coming up later on in this program, in just under a half an hour, the author of this book called Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It, Ari Berman. You may have seen him on programs or on networks like MSNBC. He is also a voting rights reporter for Mother Jones. Ari Berman will be here live joining Trygve Olson and myself. I cannot wait. Trygve Olson, of course, like myself, a former Republican, now a senior advisor with the Lincoln Project, has graciously agreed to stick around with us for hour two. He joins us from our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Trygve, great to have you here in hour two.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be here.
I love how understated Trygve is sometimes. And in just a little while, after the 20 after break, our friend Kelly Call, one of the producers of the great film Just a Bit Outside the Movie, going to be closing in several theaters in Wisconsin tomorrow. Kelly's going to update us on where you can check that movie out this afternoon and tomorrow as well before it leaves theaters here in Wisconsin. Give us an update on that before we talk to Ari Berman. Trygve, one of the things we're talking about is this goofy, I'll call it goofy, weird, strange rally of Trump's in Pennsylvania over the weekend. The Daily Show did a great take on this, and the reporter, the anchor, Desi Lighting, kind of set this up. Mr. Zommers, we'll listen to a minute or so of this. Here's the Daily Show from this week.
But let me just take a few minutes to walk you through this town hall, because trust me, it's worth it. Trump was doing a town hall with puppy shooter Kristi Noem, and all was well. He took four questions, and then a couple of people passed out from the heat. And Trump stopped the Q&A to make sure everyone was okay, which was great, although he was still very Trumpy about it.
They're both okay.
Yes.
They're both in good shape.
And that's wonderful.
Would anybody else like to faint?
Anyone else want to pull focus with their medical emergency? Get it out of the way. Calm down, Donald. No one was trying to faint. Trust me, no one wants to have a medical episode in front of Kristi Noem. She's just looking for an excuse to take you to the gravel pit. She cocked her shotgun when she heard Kamala had allergies. But while the staff was attending to the situation, Trump decided to play some music to keep up morale. And this guy really knows what the people want.
So we had a beautiful evening, and I don't know if they can get this song up quickly, but if they could play Ave Maria, if you can get it, Justin, let's go if you can. It's so beautiful though, right? Listen to that. We have nice music. We're together. Not bad.
Yes.
Not bad.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, everybody, very much.
Wow. Ave Maria, huh? You sure you don't want to get the crowd hyped with some Gregorian chants instead? All right. Warming up the crowd, easing them into it. Then you hit them with the banger, a different version of the same song.
If my guys can hear me, let's listen to Pavarotti
sing Ave Maria. Can you hear that? They gave me the Ave Maria with no voice. Put on Pavarotti singing Ave Maria. Nice and loud. Turn it up louder. We want a little action here. Turn it up louder.
I want to hear this.
Why does Trump know so much about Ave Maria? Was it used in a McDonald's commercial? Man, he really loves that song. Who's going to tell him it's about a virgin?
All right, there we go. So that's Desi Lening on The Daily Show. All right, Mr. Sommers, here we go. Time to play What's Worse. This or that. Time once again to play What's Worse. No prize money involved, nothing to give away, just your opportunity to have your voice heard on statewide radio and around the world on the Civic Media app. All right, there you heard it.
Todd.
Yes?
Getting to talk to us is a prize in and of itself.
So well, for some. For you, yes. For people who talk to you, yes, absolutely. What's worse, that Trump had a dance party for 40 minutes or that most people stayed around? 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. What's worse, that Donald Trump, as you heard, had this goofy, impromptu 40-minute dance party in Pennsylvania, or that most people stayed around? 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Yes?
Do you know what the last lines of the song Ave Maria are?
No, I don't.
They are. Oh, this is the end of time. This is the end of me. It's time of my end. That is literally the translated words to the end of Ave Maria. I'm pretty sure he's never seen the opera.
I bet you're 100% right. He has not. My guess is that he's running out of songs that he is allowed to play because right. The artists keep contacting him and he's like, all right, we're going to do some religious stuff because nobody's going to tell me I can't play it anymore.
Perhaps.
So, yeah. I don't think he knows what that opera is about. Unfortunately, my wife is very into opera. And earlier in our dating life, when I felt obligated that I had to go to the opera with her, I actually would go to the opera. Now I've kind of reached a point in our marriage where we've agreed that I don't have to do that and she doesn't have to attend my old men's hockey games. But yes, I'm not sure he's aware of that. And then you have all those people, and what does he go with next? YMCA by the Village People.
Yeah, I mean,
ironic, really, don't you think?
Right?
Having a bunch of these evangelicals dancing around to a group that was like,
it's a gay anthem.
Trying to introduce the gay lifestyle. It is a gay anthem.
As a gay man, I can tell you it's a gay anthem.
Right. It is.
And yeah, it's absolutely ironic. And maybe we'll play this later on or more of it tomorrow. But Desi on The Daily Show goes through several of these songs in his playlist. And she makes
somebody needs to do. Do you remember that song "Shut Up and Dance with Me," where they did all those like Hollywood versions and whatever? Somebody needs to do a Donald Trump version of "Shut Up and Dance with Me" by Walk the Moon.
That'd be pretty good. We can maybe Thomas and I can work
Don't
on that.
Don't dare
in
you
our free
leave.
Time.
Yeah, you could do your own set of words to it.
Right. Exactly. So what's worse, everyone, that Donald Trump had this impromptu dance party for 40 minutes or that people stayed around for it? 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Or you can also text. People did. Some people stayed.
They left. There were a lot of people who left.
Yes.
I saw a video on Twitter that suggested there were a lot of people leaving the building.
I think you're right. They tell me I
they
have
were
to,
like,
they
yeah,
tell me I have it, to do this stuff. So I'm just, I'm not
it
just
It looked
following
like
orders.
U.S. Bank Stadium on the December 31st game when the Packers were up by about five touchdowns.
Yes.
Or the famous Bears Bears-Packers game with Brett Favre, 35-0.
But
and right. most of Tommy Thompson's staff was getting beers chucked at them from the upper deck.
So talk to me a minute about this, because I guess I didn't know how weird it was until yesterday when I was going through. I saw a couple of clips, but then I saw a lot of these like 5, 6, 7 montages, and it was just odd. I mean, here's a party, a candidate in Trump and MAGA that continually criticizes Vice President Harris for not putting out her plan, avoiding the press. And today she's sitting down with Bret Baier on Fox News. She's agreed to a second debate. Trump avoids 60 Minutes, won't do another debate. Harris is going all over the country having legit rallies, including Wisconsin. She is in Wisconsin tomorrow in La Crosse, Green Bay, and Milwaukee. Former President Obama and Walz are going to be here in Madison next Tuesday. And he's got Kristi Noem, an ally with him, and he won't even take questions at his own rally. He avoids it for 40 minutes, Trigby. What does this say?
I don't know. He's weird. He's weird. Or actually, I think this might be like if Kristi Noem's being honest. I mean, it is funny to say that she might take him to the gravel pit. Right. Well, but beyond the old Yeller analogies, I think if that were your dad or your grandfather, mm-hmm. like you would be like, I think it's time to take the car keys. And that's kind of, they've done that. That's the political equivalent of what La Civita's done. And I guess if you believe the story that's running in the Daily Beast, he's getting paid, you know, like $23 million to run the campaign. So, they need, you know, somebody, they're basically not having him do anything because they know that if he's out there, and he tries to do a real interview. He did try and do one with Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal. He attacked the Wall Street Journal, which is a Murdoch paper, right. And the editorial board has been owned by him. Like, we really need to, you know, there were legitimate questions about Joe Biden. And I think I expressed some of that in concerns that voters had. Mm. I think voters, if they're really being honest, and I think you're seeing that too, to a degree. This is, he got whooped in the debate by Harris, and it's the same things happening.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting down the stretch here to see it. You know, he has got nothing scheduled right now, Trump, to come back to Wisconsin. And again, Harris is going to be in 3 cities tomorrow around the state of Wisconsin. We're going to come back, flip a page, talk a little baseball, movies. Kelly Call, one of the great producers of the film of the fall, just a bit outside the movie, joins us on the other side. Here's a little bit more Pavarotti to take you to the break. Don't go anywhere. It's the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 21 now past the hour of 1 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. Now that, Zommers, that's a soundtrack right there. You understand?
A little bit more energetic than some opera?
A little bit more. It gets you in a mood of hope, inspiration, fulfillment, and that's exactly what you're going to feel like walking out of the theater if you go see the film of the fall, as I'm calling it, just a bit outside the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. And joining Trigby and I from beautiful Los Angeles, California, Mr. Kelly Call, one of the great co-producers of this film. Kelly, thanks for taking the time to come back on the show.
Todd, great to be back. I'm starting to feel like the boy who cried wolf here a little bit, because you're generous enough to keep having, you know, me or Sean on and talking about the end of the run. And, you know, thanks to the good people of Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula, you know, the run keeps being extended, which is, you know, phenomenal.
And that's great news. I mean, what are we on, number week 6, week 7 now?
I think we're going into week 6. Yeah.
I mean, that's
it's amazing.
Just incredible. I want to make sure, before we run out of time, tell us the theaters, I've got it in front of me as well, of the places in Wisconsin and the UP where this film is ending tomorrow. So you have just right. this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow.
Yeah, two more nights in Brookfield, which I think has been our number one theater. So thanks to the good people around Brookfield and Waukesha. Burlington, my hometown. Glendale, Mequon, Park Falls, Platteville, Portage. And then in the UP, Escanaba, Marquette, and Quinnesec, Michigan.
Very good.
So thank you to those good people.
So check out exact show times on justabitoutsidethemovie.com or also marcustheaters.com, depending upon where you're at. And you can get the exact show times and check that out because they're fluctuating a little bit. So I want to make sure we got that out there. But tell us how this film obviously doing well. I know you guys are excited about it. And you've got another opening out in California this week.
We are premiering at the Newport Beach Film Festival this Friday, and then there'll be another showing the following Tuesday. Sean and I are going to be doing Q&A after the Friday viewing, and we invite all our friends. I don't know what your listenership is in California, Todd, but
we have a couple of folks, legit. We do.
All right. Yeah. Well, everybody is welcome. So come on down. We'll probably buy some beers afterward for anybody who comes. So.
All right. We'll tell L.A. Tom, who called in earlier today. If you're still listening, L.A., go out there. Tell him you heard it on the All Ball Show. I'll try to get my friends out there, Nelson and Dahlia and other people as well. So we do have a couple of people listening out in L.A. Trigvi, you have a bone to pick.
I do. I'm out in Virginia. I'm not in California. and I really want to see it. And I can't stream it. And I will also tell you, my daughter is 15 and is going to a charter school learning film, of all things. She likes making documentaries, which is both a blessing and a curse, by the way. But I want to show her this because I was about that age when the Brewers made that run. And I'm a Twins fan, actually. But it was a magical time, and I don't have a way to see it.
Trigvi, I'm glad you asked, and all I can say is please be patient. We are working on ways via home video or streaming to get the show to the people all over the United States. It's been amazing, to be honest. We thought we would handle most of it just by opening in theaters in Wisconsin, but the response around the country has been amazing with texts and emails and DMs of how can I see this movie? I love the Brewers. So it's coming. If you follow us on Twitter or Instagram, we'll have news about it hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Wow. Awesome. There you go. You heard
Can
it here
first.
Can you
do the 87 Twins next?
A little Kirby Puckett.
We might. I people have said that a lot, like what's next? And you know, I don't know because it was a unique time and it occupies a unique place in kind of Sean and my heart or our hearts because right. Like you, Trigvi, we were teenagers growing up. Yeah. These were our guys, and this was our team.
What's it been like, Kelly? For those that might not have joined us before, you're longtime and a former president of CBS Entertainment. You know, helped get a lot of shows like Survivor and CSI and Ghost on the Air. What's it like? I mean, you gave the green light or helped in that production. What's it like to be on the creative side? And I know how much of your heart and passion and soul you and Sean put into this. What's it like being on that side and seeing the success?
Well, it's the difference between being a buyer and being a seller. Being a buyer is, quite frankly, a lot easier. Being on the other side of the table and people coming to you and saying, we'd like you to buy, you know, this show of ours. But on the creative end, you're kind of detached from it a little bit. It's yours, but you're not, you know, you're not day to day all in on the creative of the show. As a seller, and the case of this movie, you know, Sean and I and our co-producer Paul, we, you know, every single element is kind of our baby, and so we do have pride of ownership. And you know, as I think I've told you 100 times, we are, you know, incredibly proud of this. I think we were most gratified by seeing the players' reaction. Most of them saw it for the first time about a month ago, and they, you know, they. None of them punched us in the face, and most of them gave us hugs and handshakes.
Yeah, Trigvi.
No, I just think it's so cool, right? Because the from what I've seen in the trailer, since I haven't been able to see it, right? The reason I'm so intrigued with it is it captures a moment in time and the characters of it, but everybody can relate to it on a personal level too, who lived it, right? And you know, so it was mowing the lawn, listening to Bob Uecker and you know, Gorman Thomas. hit the ball.
I mean, I think a lot of it, and this didn't even really occur to Sean and I until we screened it for the first time, and we said, my God, this is a time machine. For 2 hours, you are transported back 40 plus years, and I don't think you really leave. You stay there, and it feels different, and in some ways, it feels kind of good.
Can I ask you a question? I mean, you were on the buying side at CBS. Don't you think there's a lot of downsides to the fact now that anybody can, with a mobile phone, make content. But one of the good things about it is movies like this probably would have never been able to be made 10 years ago or 15 years ago, right? Like, it would have been really hard. Or am I wrong about that?
Well, I think the doc could have been made. We didn't, with all due respect, we didn't shoot this on our phones.
No, I'm not saying that. But
I think to your point, what it is allowing is especially younger people to be able to really produce some professional looking programming. And as a proving ground, a testing ground, a way to learn, I think it's phenomenal for younger people. And maybe not our movie, but lots of documentaries out there have come as a result of that.
Kelly Call and Sean Hannish's movie is called Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 Brewers. Check it out on justabitoutsidethemovie.com and marcustheaters.com. Kelly Call, many, many thanks for taking the time. As always, we appreciate you so much.
You're the best, Todd. Thank you.
You are. Thank you very much, Kelly Call. Stay tuned. Ari Berman on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead. And having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 34 minutes now past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome back in on this Wednesday, October 16th, 2024. Many thanks to Kelly Call from the movie Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 Brewers. Make sure you see it, folks. It really is a really great movie. And also many thanks to Trigby Olson, like myself, a former Republican, now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, for sticking around for our nation's capital as we welcome in a very special guest this half hour. He is the author of Minority Rule, the Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It, also a voting rights reporter for Mother Jones and many other things, a man of many talents, Mr. Ari Berman. Ari, thanks so much for being on the show and welcome in.
Hey, Todd. Hey, Trigvi. Great to see you guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
Well, it's a real pleasure. I'm a fan. I'm always, if I've gotten through books, I say it. I'm about a quarter of the way through this one, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Did you check? You have not seen your cameo yet, have you?
I have a cameo in the book? No, I'm not.
There's a cameo in the book.
Oh, my
you do
gosh.
Indeed.
Good
yep.
Lord.
Yep.
Now, now
the
I'm
man who blew the whistle.
Oh, well, there you go. Yes, that's a whole other bottle of wine, as they say. But what I like about this, and I want you to tell us in your own words how you came to write this. Right away, this quote, you open it up and it says, "The supreme issue involving all others is the encroachment of the powerful few upon the rights of the many." A quote from our very own Robert Fighting Bob La Follette from 1913. How did you come to write this, Ari?
Fighting Bob. See, there you go. This is I did my Wisconsin research for this one.
Yeah.
I've been covering the issue of voting rights for more than a decade, which is how we first came to talk, Todd. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And after I started covering all these new restrictions on voting, I began to ask myself, what's the purpose of all this? Is it just to try to gain some kind of political advantage, or is there some larger project behind it? And I realized that the larger project was minority rule, that there was this radical right-wing movement that was a minority of the population, but they wanted to control a majority of power through things like voter suppression and gerrymandering. And that seemed really dangerous to me. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to show how Trump was certainly an accelerant to the democratic crisis that we face, but he was also a product of a broken political system, and that the problems that we're facing go deeper than just Trump. And in fact, they go back 230 years to how the Constitution was set up, but more recently, they go back to what people like Scott Walker and the Republican Party did in Wisconsin. and how that really laid the groundwork for the radicalization of the Republican Party, which led to Trump and has, of course, gotten even more extreme since then.
We'll go back to Scott Walker, one of Trigvi Olsen's favorite subjects, in just a minute. But I want to ask you this, because it's a question that Trigvi and I have both gotten individually. It's a question that we get from listeners and viewers on this show. And they say, Todd, you know, Trigvi, as former Republicans, where did things start going south? Where did the party of Lincoln go wrong? And you mentioned this right away in the book. There's a through line here, it appears to me, and it's Pat Buchanan. Explain.
I think there's lots of different points in which you can say the Republican Party went wrong. I start in the 1990s with Pat Buchanan because he starts to voice the fear of the changing demographics of the country. And he starts to say, we are entering this majority-minority future in which white people will one day be the minority in the country, and we have to do something about it. And he quite literally, this is back in 1992 and 1996, he calls for building a Buchanan wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, stopping immigration, repealing things like the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And the interesting thing is, he's thought of as a radical within the Republican Party at the time. And he's pushed aside by people like Bob Dole, who stand up for a more moderate Republican Party. But I think if you look at these kind of figures, not just Buchanan, but other people like him, they start shifting the conversation to the right in the Republican Party. And they start laying the groundwork for Trump. And at some point, the Republican Party believes that instead of trying to win over the changing demographics of the country, they have to stop those changing demographics from having an impact on the political process. So I trace it back to the 1990s, and I think it's just accelerated since then. And I think Trump has very clearly made that a centerpiece of the campaign in terms of his racism, his nativism, and the white resentment that he continues to fuel through his actions and his rhetoric.
Trigvi Olsen, your colleague at Lincoln Project, Stuart Stevens, has written in his book along the same lines, you know, going back to Buchanan's involvement with Nixon and kind of, you know, having this fear of, to Ari's point, this minority or majority-minority, and basically like, oh my gosh, you know, we might not be as white as we might have been. You've worked all over the world on behalf of democracy. You've seen this in other countries. Talk to that a little bit and whatever you have for Ari.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's right to start in the 90s, right? Like, that's important. And you have some other electoral, the first person, it seems to me, and I would be interested in your take on this, Ari, Pete Wilson was in real trouble, and in California, that would have been about 94, right? And he inversed himself. I think the other, and so that was kind of the first time somebody had political success with it. But simultaneous to that, you know, Donald Trump really politicized and personified within our politics the rhetoric that was talk radio, that was Fox News, and so much of that was built on the other, and the obvious other is that changing demographic. And I have seen that around the world, and quite frankly, it's a toxic mix for creating extremism, right? The four psychological pillars, because it's distress, it's simplistic answers, it's overconfidence, and then it becomes intolerance towards those others.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think what you had is, since the 1960s, you had the Southern strategy of Nixon, which was to try to create a backlash basically to the civil rights movement, and to use these hot button issues to split apart white Democrats and to make them Republicans. That was very successful. It was still quite controversial in the party. You had people dissent from it, but that was definitely a strategy. I think what Buchanan did is he layered on opposition to the civil rights movement with opposition to immigration and demographic change more broadly. And that was pretty new within the party, because Trigvi, I'm sure you've watched this. There's this amazing debate between Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush back in 1980 when they're running against each other for president. And they're basically saying we should create a pathway to citizenship. We shouldn't demonize people who come from Mexico seeking a better life. I mean, it's incredible to watch this in the era of Donald Trump. So the Republican Party was still pretty much supportive of immigration, supportive of things like free trade. They wanted to be more a global party. Trump would call them globalist right now, but they were proud of that. They were proud of the idea that they were welcoming of people and they were standing up for American values and they were trying to assimilate new people into the country. And Buchanan sort of said, no, we have to build a wall against that. And I think, to me, the second real turning point is the election of Barack Obama in 2008. Right. Because what happens is you see a much more diverse electorate in 2008. This is known as the coalition of the ascendant, right? It's going to be young people, people of color, more moderate whites joining together in this kind of rainbow coalition. And that starts to radicalize the Republican Party too, because they don't believe they can start winning over this new electorate. And of course, there's this whole debate over the 2012 election and the autopsy, which I write about in the book, which is, should Republicans embrace things like immigration reform? Should they try to court these new constituencies? Or should they try to turn their back on it and court more reactionary white voters? And clearly, the Trump part of that won the argument, right? Because you had Lindsey Graham and John McCain and Marco Rubio work on immigration reform. And then the House kills it. And then now you have, you know, Rubio and Graham are some of the most enthusiastic supporters of Donald Trump right now. And so the whole party has shifted away from being a party that wants to open up its appeal to one that instead it is increasingly trying to make kind of race-based appeals, and actually making race-based appeals now to voters of color, which is the thing that Trump is doing, and apparently quite successfully in some cases. But in sort of instead of embracing the future, going back to the past.
We are talking with Ari Berman. He is the author of his latest book here called Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. Have it right here in my hands, partway through. Cannot wait to get it finished here. You could get it wherever you buy your books. He is also a voting rights reporter for Mother Jones, makes frequent appearances on network and cable news shows around the nation. You've probably seen him. We're honored he's here. Ari, you're going to be here physically in the state of Wisconsin, I know. And you have a particular interest in Wisconsin. Tell us about that. What brings you to Wisconsin?
I do. So I'm going to be here on Friday, October 18th, speaking at the Wisconsin Book Festival in Madison, which is a great event. I'll be speaking with Wisconsin Public Radio for that. So hopefully people can come out. It's at the Madison Central Library. I'm also going to sneak in some campaign reporting while I'm in town as well. One of the things I'm really interested in about Wisconsin is Wisconsin became this model after 2010, after the Republican takeover in 2010 under Scott Walker, for restricting Democratic participation by passing new laws to make it harder to vote, really extreme gerrymandering, going after labor unions, things like that. And the interesting thing is that that was a model that Republicans replicated across the country. It's also something that has backfired in a lot of different ways and led to Democratic victories in a lot of places. And one of the fascinating things is those gerrymandered maps, of course, as you guys know, have been struck down, meaning there's competitive elections for the state legislative in Wisconsin for the first time in about a decade and a half. And that's a really interesting story to me because, of course, Wisconsin's a battleground for the president and the Senate and all of those races, but it's always a battleground for those races. Where it has not been a battleground is for the state legislature. And I think that's a really undercovered important story because the state legislature has really been the dominant institution in Wisconsin politics and shaping the direction of the state for the past 15 years. And now you have a situation where the state legislature, at least in the assembly, is up for grabs. And I think that's a really fascinating political story.
Well, and I want to go down this road right now because we're here to talk to you, but you brought it up. I mean, that's literally why I left the Republican Party in 2011, because I was witness to what people tried to deem as quote unquote voter ID bills. When I saw behind closed doors, it was specifically for voter suppression against black and brown people and college students across the state of Wisconsin. I said, peace out. That's not what I spent 30 years of my life. To your point, I mean, my very first race I volunteered on was 1980, and we've played that clip of Reagan and Bush the first on this show. And you're absolutely right, Ari. That's the party I signed up for in 1980, and it's very different today. But to your point you just made, it is lost. I think it is undercovered that if not for Tony Evers, Wisconsin right now politically would be Texas and Florida.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, in terms of what they've tried to do. And I think in many ways, Wisconsin might have provided the roadmap that places like Texas and Florida it followed in terms of enacting those kind of extreme policies. But the amazing thing is that Wisconsin is basically this 50-50 state that's decided by 10,000 to 20,000 votes in every single close election. But in the legislature, Republicans were closer to getting a supermajority than to being voted out of office under the maps that were passed. And I think that really warped the state from the fact that they would not repeal an abortion ban from 1849 to they won't do anything on healthcare or guns or education, where they're so clearly out of step with the rest of the state. And governing, as you said, like they're in Tennessee or Mississippi, as opposed to being in a place like Wisconsin. So the fact that the legislature could be more moderate is, I think, going to change the politics of Wisconsin. We've seen the politics of Wisconsin change already in terms of who's been elected governor, attorney general, to the state Supreme Court, which is another thing that it has gotten changed a lot in the state. So I think Wisconsin's really been one of those places that people look to.
Yeah.
And when Wisconsin is a state that is restricting Democratic participation, that has a ripple effect. And when Wisconsin is a state that is upholding Democratic participation, which it did for hundreds of years until I would argue Scott Walker and his allies took over, that has a ripple effect to other states as well.
Ari Berman has brought up the name Scott Walker, Trigvi Olsen's favorite person to kick around. We'll do a little bit of that because there's a serious side. He deserves it. The thing is, the guy deserves it. Ari Berman is the author of this great new book, Minority Rule. We'll talk to Mr. Berman and also Trigvi Olsen after this. Don't go anywhere. It's the All Ball Show right here across Wisconsin and around the world on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 9 before the hour of 2 o'clock at the top of the hour. Maggie Dawn takes over these airwaves after CBS or ABC News, depending upon which station you are listening to across the Civic Media Radio Network. We are joined, our ongoing contributor and co-host on Wednesdays, Mr. Trigvi Olsen, now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project. We are honored to have our guest this half hour. He is the author. As a matter of fact, we just got a text from a listener here on WMDX in Madison, said, I came in late. What is the name of the book that he's talking about? Thank you so very much for asking. It is called Minority Rule, the Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It. You can do like I did and go to the West Side, Barnes & Noble, and get it right away. Or I'm sure you could get it on the old Amazon or many other places wherever you buy your books. It's called Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman. He is also a voting rights reporter for Mother Jones and appears on various network and cable shows across the country. And he's going to be here in Madison this Friday. You can see him in person. Are you going to sign books, Ari?
I will. Yep.
Look at that. Get your book autographed at the Wisconsin.
I'll even talk to you if you buy one.
Oh, my gosh. What a guy. What a guy. Wisconsin Book Festival. It is here at the Madison Central Library. Literally, I can see the roof where I'm standing outside of our windows right now. From 6 until 7 p.m., Wisconsin Book Festival at the Madison Central Library from 6 until 7. Any need to pre-register, Ari?
No. Just show up there, and I think it'll be a good crowd.
All right, we're looking forward.
Are you going to buy him some beer and curds, Todd?
We'll buy Ari anything he wants. Sure.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to the Old Fashioned afterwards. I'm going to get a $5 Brandy Old Fashioned, some curds.
Yesterday was National Cheese Curd Day, and we had Old Fashioned cheese curds right here yesterday. So you picked a good spot.
Do you want to come on a tour of Wisconsin with Todd and I in addition to right before the elections?
I know. You guys know all the spots. I know you do.
We'll love to. We'll talk to you.
Show you some good places.
Yeah, we will. Only about 5.5-6 minutes left here, guys. I want to get to this because, Ari, you brought it up going into the break. Trigvi, you mention Walker all the time, and we joke around a little bit, but it's also very serious. It was during his reign when I left the Republican Party working for my former boss, Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz. There are people in this state, because I've talked to them, I've heard them, there are people in Janesville and in Green Bay who no longer golf in golf foursomes or go to Thanksgiving dinners because of division that Scott Walker created. Go ahead, and then Ari.
Yeah, I was saying to Ari during the break, you know, what I talk about Scott Walker a lot, obviously, as listeners know. you know, and what he did to the state. But what I had never really thought of until Ari mentioned it is how much that became a model for other places ideologically, when in reality, I think Scott was just doing it because he wanted to be president of the United States since Badger Boy's state, and it was convenient to get him mentioned on Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and the places that you need to be covered.
Yeah.
And that is such an important point, because in Wisconsin, it's just not who we are. And in places that are more right-wing, it's become something even sort of more toxic and probably played a role in the rise of Trump, Ari.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think those are all really good points. I mean, if you look back at Wisconsin history, Teddy Roosevelt praised Wisconsin as a laboratory for democratic reform. Mm-hmm. It gave rise to policies like Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining rights for unions. And it really personified the idea that despite, no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And of course, there were exceptions to that, like Joe McCarthy. But generally speaking, there was this Wisconsin idea, right? I mean, it's quite literally called the Wisconsin idea with regards to public education. And Walker had a very different idea. His idea was that government and democratic institutions should work for this conservative elite instead, and that it should represent people like the Bradley Foundation and the Ulines and the people that were pouring all the money in to prop up this extreme agenda. And they knew very clearly that if they could do it in Wisconsin, they could pull it off anywhere. Because if you could go after unions in the state that gave birth to collective bargaining rights for unions, if you could roll back voter participation in a state that was always neck and neck with Minnesota for number one in voter turnout, if you could gerrymander the state so that there was no competition, a state that was known for political competition, then you could export those policies anywhere. And Walker might not have intended to do that, but certainly once he got going, he realized that. And then the amount of money that went into Wisconsin, you look at the things they did, these are all things that radicalized the Republican Party. And the reason why I write so much about the post 2010 takeover of states like Wisconsin is because I believe this laid the groundwork for Trump. That if the Republican Party had not already radicalized on the state level, they would not have been open to a figure like Trump, right?
Yeah.
Because if you have already basically turned your back on democracy, if you then say, I'm going to support someone like Donald Trump for president. So I think too often when we write the histories of Trump, it's always focused on one guy, right? And the unique threat he poses to the democratic system. And of course, Trump is a unique threat, but he's not alone in terms of the radicalization against democracy we've seen. And Wisconsin has played such a big part in that story.
Ari Berman, the book is Minority Rule, 45 seconds. What do you hope people at the end of the day, the big thing they take away from this book?
Well, I hope they take away that the problem we're facing is bigger than Trump, it's deeper than Trump, and people have to do something about it at both the national and the state level. So I think it's really important to pay attention to the states and then pay attention all the way up and down the ballot to the states. Because as I said, it was the state legislature in Wisconsin that was so much of a driver of the radicalization against democracy there, that I hope people understand that what happens at the bottom of the ticket has as much impact as what happens at the top of the ticket as well.
Ari Berman, great author, also with Mother Jones. The book is entitled Minority Rule. Get it wherever you get books. Also stop in and see him at the Wisconsin Book Festival at the Madison Central Library this Friday from 6 until 7. We'll put all that information in our show notes. Ari, thank you so very much. Can't wait to have you out here in Wisconsin.
Todd Trigvy, great to see you. Look forward to coming out tomorrow. Yes.
Our pleasure. Trigvy Olson, thanks to you as well. Pat Kreitlow and Mr. Kelly Call, great show. Mr. Zommers always does a great job on the board. And most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. Whatever you're fighting for, whatever you believe in, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Stay tuned. Maggie Dawn is next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.